This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So we just came from the set, which is amazing looking, and it's also kind of very faithful to the look and the tone of the original series. So can you sort of talk about designing this, putting your own spin on it, while keeping that look from the original series?
Thank you very much, because that's what we wanted to do, is, you know, embrace the series and kind of honor the origins. But at the same time, it's, you know, it's a big movie for summer 09, so you have to expand it, and we have the resources to take basically the same premise and try to just expand on it. I think the same guidelines. They had some serious restrictions, I think, in their budget and their time and in the technology available then. But so we have, you know, more money and more. The technology is different. We have bigger stages, you know, so it's a summer tentpole movie. So you try to step up and expand it, but it's the same premise.
What was the most challenging part of, or what was the most challenging thing that had to be built?
The most challenging thing to build would have been, so we had three large sets, like the one you just saw on stage 27, on that stage. And when we started it, we only had a certain number of stages. So schedule-wise, we had a couple of forests in there, and then we had the Pylon Plaza in there with, like, 3 weeks between changeovers. So they finish shooting, we strike it out, and build the new one in ass-bindingly blinding speed. So you go in there when it's half done, and there's just condors and cranes and people. It looks like one of those joke compressed time videos of how do they build sets in movies? You know, that was the hardest part, to keep people from killing each other.
Can you tell us specifically about the set we just saw today?
Where at what?
Well, just take us through designing and building the set we saw today.
That set. Well, that's the set you just saw is the Temple of Skulls, and it also is, and it's adjacent to a little plaza where Will Ferrell's character faces off with Grumpy, the dinosaur. So, I mean, if you read the script, you could see those as two different sets. What I try to do in designing these things is build them adjacent to one another, so that when you're in one, you see the other. When you're in this one, you see that one, and try to increase the value of the design. Otherwise, you might be inclined to your Temple of Skulls could be on the TV show. It was a room with some Sleazak heads mounted on, but you don't see beyond that. So I'm always trying to get more value out of them by ganging them together. So but the whole Sleazak culture architecture, there's not a lot of. I want to be kind of vague about it because, well, they were in the source material. But my concept was a failed utopian society. And so at one time it was all built at once, and then it all went in the toilet at once, the way failed utopian societies do.
It looks like the material is meant to look like rock and it's all carved out of rock. So is there an idea of
and it's all one piece too. There's no mortar lines. There's no. Oh, how did they build this? They cut stone and assembled it. I rather looked at it as concrete, but I thought of it as regurgitated biomatter that Sleestacks would have. that it was distinctly something that they made, but it's monolithic. It's not block and assemble. It's not cut. You know, you drive yourself insane trying to... and then it becomes distracting if you get too much into the how did they build that thing. I wanted to keep it a little bit mysterious, so... And yet it's... For me, it's inspired by Brasilia in... you know, Oscar Niemeyer's Brasilia, which was a utopian architectural project that then went into the toilet, was overrun by jungle, and then since then has been restored and used.
So you want to say true to the original series as much as possible. We were just talking about Pylon, which I understand have been updated. Are there elements that maybe were just so cheesy they had to kind of get the update?
That's the one. Yeah, I think for this kind of movie, I just, you know, couldn't see, you know, and with the tools we have available, and with CG, and with effects, and with all the stuff we have, I think that it would be, that's an instance where if you did what they did in the TV show, it might be cute and amusing for about 3 seconds, but in the duration of a, whatever it is, 90-minute, two-hour movie, where it really is an important part. You sacrifice jeopardy, and I need to treat this very seriously and respectfully. If I just do a campy recreation, then there's something very insincere and insulting about that. So I felt it was time to upgrade the pylon and make it. And what I arrived at that because there were in the material there was references to crystals, so I took the crystal thing as a motif, and it goes from the jewelry to the pylon to the interior of the pylon, which is literally crystals floating in a black void, and the control that Enoch, I can't remember the name of it now, I'm so burned out. interior pylon, there's a control panel that's also made up of crystals, and he just lightly waves his claws over them. So the crystal things play large, and I thought, well, let's just make the portal a crystal, so you just sort of walk into it.
I'm assuming
that was the hardest part creatively, is recognizing that the gold foil box is not going to cut it. All right, so what is it going to be? And that in conjunction with interior pylon. I don't know. So, but I like a little of that, you know.
So I'm assuming also, obviously, you're making the T-Rex jumping look more Jurassic Park, more King Kong, like, you know, or is it, or do you play homage at all to the original stop-motion animation? Design.
No, I think that the goal is that it has it's a little bit manipulated, but you still have to, again, you have to have the jeopardy and the danger of a real T-Rex. But the difference here is that this one, in its coloration, is slightly different. There are a few exaggerated little features, but it's still basically a T-Rex and a realistically rendered T-Rex. What it does have is the ability, hopefully, in the animation, with subtlety and gesture and nuance and glance, it actually has its own, it is its own character. I mean, in Jurassic Park, it was just a killing machine. This one has some sort of dim awareness of something. Not even dim, really. He responds to things that Will Ferrell says.
We were told that you're not using a lot of green screen, so how did you decide what things you were going to use with the green screen and what CGI and what's actually built?
when you read it, there are some obvious things. Obviously the dinosaurs and creatures are CGI and green screen because, again, puppets end up being cheesy. People... do it all the time. Oh, no, we can do these shots with that robotic puppet arm, and you end up throwing it out, and you've spent money. So we avoided a lot of that. So the creatures are all CG and green screen. Now, in terms of settings, you have a lot of scenes where you have, you know, the three principal humans, Chaka, and then a dinosaur. So that requires a space large enough to accommodate that staging. So, ergo, we're on big stages. But even with those, there will be set extension in certain instances. The goal was to try to, with the staging in mind, build as much as I could on stage, because it still is a comedy, and comedies work best when you have people in the same frame reacting with each other. So
I'm curious, when you get the project, do you have like a certain budget that you're given? We have to build all this stuff for $10 million, or I mean, how does that work with the, you know, the process of how much money you have versus how much you have to build, and you know, that kind of thing?
That's a good question, because it's a little bit mysterious. When you learn what is this movie? Is it a sneaky little cheesy down and dirty independent film that, you know, it's not that. It's not this. It's a Universal Studios summer movie, action comedy adventure based on Land of the Lost. So knowing that, you know, it costs a certain amount of money, and I try to design sets to fit into that model. Now, I just start designing it, and I know that it's going to be, you know, I know approximately what it's going to cost just based on the pattern that goes with these movies. And then you begin this kind of bargaining process where no one really says how much they have to spend, and you don't really say how much it's going to cost. And it's this weird ritual that you go through on every movie. And then you arrive at a mutually disagreeable number. Oh, well, can't spend that much. I can't build it for that much.
Do you ever say, I can't do it for that much money?
So there's that whole dance, and it's all posturing and confidence. And it's a scam.
Well, what's interesting is that...
But it finds its number.
You in this project, you seem to have not much loose rein. And a lot of practical sets.
Right.
So, is this the kind of film that more money was spent on, you know, less on CGI and more on practical?
Yes. I mean, if you were to compare it to a movie like 300, something like that, yes. The deliberate choice is to build as much in camera. And I think for the because it's there is a lot of character-driven comedy in it. So, I think you need the settings. You need the live sets.
There are sort of two schools of thought when it comes to design and CGI. There's the one school of thought that CGI allows you to envision anything and
right.
it can happen, and then there's the other school of thought that by keeping things practical, it forces you to be more inventive, to sort of like come up with different solutions. How does CGI affecting your job now? Do you like having the ability to pick up anything and bring it out, or do you like that challenge of like, how are we going to possibly make this work?
I like both things. When I start designing it and drawing pictures and pre-visualizing it in my head, I don't really think about CGI versus practical. I like to design it first and then see what's the best way to achieve it?
I have to ask, you know, the original TV show, they played it straight. It wasn't necessarily a comedy. You know, there was the campiness to
right.
it. What was the decision to make this a comedy instead of maybe doing it a, you know, more of an action adventure, you know, film without the comedic aspect of it?
You would have to back. You would have to ask, you know, Jimmy Miller and Will Farrell and the studio, because by the time I'm brought on, it's an action adventure comedy. Here's the thing: is I think, you know, you're trying to, when the movie gets to this scale and scope, you're looking for. I know studios look for movies that work for all four quadrants, right? So you've got dinosaurs, you've got comedy, you've got Will Ferrell. You're rounding out your chances of hitting a larger target. And I mean, I'm saying that just as a, you know, there's nothing insidious about it. It's just what it is.
But at the same time, you never set out to make funny sense.
Never. Not at all.
Well, on this.
Not making fun of the... There's nothing funny about... There should not be anything funny about the sets or the design. I think that the more seriously you take it, and the more grounded and weighted and real that the settings and the effects feel, the funnier it is. When you go make fun of it, it's just it's annoying.
What about when you're building a set and the challenges that a lot of the actors and extras are going to be in a full costume? Do you have to ever redesign anything to get around that? Are there difficulties with that?
I'm sorry, can you ask that again?
Well, when you're designing a set and the logistics of it, but you've got a lot of actors that are going to be in a full suit, some of them are going to have maybe...
Right, you mean like Slee Stacks.
Right, like Slee Stacks.
Yeah, you know, I'm involved in how it's designed and its look. I get involved in early on. So I saw, you know, the limitations they have. And I actually underestimated how difficult it is. For instance, in that set there, we had, regular stair treads that were about 12 inches. And these things have, like, gigantic feet. So we had to make bigger treads for them to walk up and down steps in this set and the one prior. So what that meant was... Okay, so the treads, each tread grows by 3 or 4 inches. Well, now it starts to push in on the set, and you end up with no flat playing space, and just ends up being stairs. So we pushed our platform actually down, no, brought it up higher so that the stairs didn't have to go down as far, those kind of things.
Well, quick fairly tedious. Follow-up. When you were pushing the C-Stacks again, did you give any thought to C-Stack reproductive biology? As they are naked and have no genitals. Did that ever come up?
Don't look there. it does come up because there's a scene in the movie where there's a couple Slee Stacks caught making out in a cave.
Really?
And it is hot.
This is going to be rated G-13 for some Slee Stack sexuality?
No, just as they're about to, you cut to our characters. Oh my god! I look at dailies in groups, you know, in big chunks now and then, and so all the construction guys and the painters and the plasterers and the modelers and stuff, they want to see what's going on too. So I said, yeah, come on, we're going to look at a bunch of dailies, and a lot of them, you know, haven't even read the script. They're just coming, they're doing their job, they do it beautifully. But they have enough pride, they want to see what's going on, what we've built, what's all this crazy crap we're building. So they look at it, yeah, fine, but they're seeing bits and pieces out of context. And so there's no understanding of, oh, well, you know what precedes this, right, is this sequence, and so this is really funny. You know, I can't do that. But the dailies of the two Slee Stacks in the cave, in the mushroom, and the heart-shaped opening behind them, and needs no setup, needs nothing. It is just balls out, hardcore funny. So that's a joy.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.